it. This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Stories of shady behavior by the Murtaughs in Hampton County didn't just start with Alec. It goes way, way back. In all this week, we're going to be taking a look at the Murtaughs and their near century of influence of the residents of Hampton County, South Carolina. To take us there, Michael DeWitt Jr., award-winning editor of the 144-year-old Hampton County Guardian, joins us. He's also authoring the book Fall of the House of Murtaugh, to be released later this summer. What do you make of some of the allegations, if you will, or rumors and such that Alec was involved in more things in the drug world with his addiction? When you look at how much he claimed that he was taking, I mean, it doesn't even seem to be humanly possible to go through that much in terms of money for drugs. Do you think there is something else going on there? Is there any evidence that points to a larger, more conspiratorial drug involvement that he was with, not necessarily connecting to the murders, but just in life? Was he making money through selling illicit drugs or trafficking them in some way, shape, or form?
You know, that's still a big question mark and a big theory. A lot of people say, okay, well, I even heard somebody tell me just last week that they don't think Alex did it, that the drug gang made him watch while they pulled the trigger. And I find that hard to believe. Yeah. I mean, if you're, he was a meal ticket for them. He was a money man. I think that they had a lot more to gain by keeping him around and keeping him on the hook. But I think there's more to this drugs. It's obviously a lie. He wasn't taking 50 grand worth of pills a week. I think the drugs were a means of making money for him and a means of laundering money. Mm-hmm. If I understand the way, this worked through the indictments and the warrants, he'd say he takes a little bit of stolen money from the law firm. Say he takes 50 grand worth of stolen money. He gives it to Cousin Eddie, Curtis Edward Smith.
Yep.
And he says, all right, let's buy some drugs and let's turn this into the 100 grand or a quarter million. Mm-hmm. So I think he was buying for himself, obviously. And I've heard rumors that he was hooking up his friends and buddies with drugs whenever they needed some. But I think it was mainly just another way to bring in a stream of untraceable revenue and also possibly launder some of this stolen money.
Mm-hmm. There's obviously other cases. We talked about the boat crash incident and how that all transpired. Let's talk about Gloria Satterfield. That was a very bizarre case, the alleged trip and fall by the dogs down the stairs, and then to get insurance money that he was going to pay the family but never paid the family. Alec was there. We heard the 911 call, as was his wife, who was there as well. When you look at that one, do you view that one as this was just a really weird accident that happened and he ended up doing non-correct things with the money and pocketing it? Or is there something more to that where there was an intention to try and kill Gloria for some reason?
One thing you have to keep in mind, once a story like this, a crime saga like this becomes public, conspiracy theories abound.
Sure.
It's easy to believe the wildest and the worst,
Mm-hmm.
The family and the attorneys of Gloria's family and her attorneys, even they don't think this was foul play.
Yeah.
This was an accident. If you look back, Maggie and Paul were home and I don't think Alec was home that day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really believe this based on there's no evidence there was any foul play involved.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was once she fell, and Alex kind of sprang into action. He saw an opportunity to create this fraudulent case and profit from it. So in simplest terms, Alex wasn't the big bad wolf that pushed her down the steps. Mm-hmm. Alex was the buzzard who swooped in, yeah, looking to profit from her tragic accident.
That seems to make a little more sense. And knowing his pattern of behavior was more so as the buzzard than the until we learned about, you know, his wife and child at a later date. When looking at all of these cases, you have Satterfield, and then you also have the allegations, you know, that have been made. Nothing ever, no investigation into the Murdaughs or his son Buster or anything like that. But obviously, rumors have flown around for quite a while with that. My question would be, they reopened the investigation into the death of Stephen Smith because of some evidence that was found in the murder trial, in the murder case of Alec Murdaugh. We don't really know exactly what that evidence was, why they would reopen that case connected to this, everybody making their assumptions that, oh, maybe he's involved. Can you speak to that at all? What was the catalyst for reopening that case? Obviously, it looked far worse than a true hit and run. It was not a hit and run by any stretch of the imagination in terms of evidence, but why was Murdaugh connected to that? How did that reopen in connection with his case?
That's a question I can't firmly answer. You know, if I don't know something, I'm going to tell you I don't know it. I try to be honest and straightforward.
Yeah.
I've heard, you know, Sled's statement back in June of 2021, it kind of read one way, mm-hmm, but then a more recent statement kind of read a different way. And you know, at first we were hearing that they found something, some piece of evidence back then, maybe something on a cell phone or even a the gossips were saying, oh, they found a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Well, now it appears that maybe they didn't find any piece of evidence. Maybe they were responding, you know, in light of looking at this whole story, they were hearing the same rumors about Stephen Smith and the same stories that the media and the public were. And so they decided to open up this case. I think that might be more accurate than them finding any smoking gun or bloody baseball bat. But I don't know for sure. And mm-hmm, one thing I do know is I've talked to some of the investigators that are now working this case, and it may not be. It's I think once again it goes to this conspiracy theory that you know, everything isn't necessarily always the worst case scenario. Based on the evidence, I think the investigators are now thinking that, yeah, this was a hit and run. There was no bloody baseball bat. But the question remains is who did it and who was with them that night? And is there a Murdaugh connection or not? And I think these questions, one of the interviews I did recently, one of the investigators told me, I think we're going to have some answers by Labor Day of this year. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
I don't know how it could be a hit and run because none of the evidence points to it being a hit and run. The way that the body was positioned, the damage to the body, the shoes, the him, Stephen, did not have the markings of a hit and run.
Well, and that's what we were hearing for a long time.
Yeah.
But after, you know, talking to some of the private people that have been hired by Bland Richter and different, mm-hmm, people very close to the case, they're saying that, you know, they're kind of leaning toward the fact that that an item like a mirror on a truck could very well have done that. They think that they don't think he was killed anywhere else and dumped in the road. They think he was killed in the road, and they think it was not like a standard hit and run where a vehicle hits you and knocks you out of your shoes. They think it was something swiped him, like a mirror, mm-hmm, or a part of a vehicle that would, you know, do significant impact to the brain and the neck, but not necessarily, knock you out of your shoes or throw your whole body. So
interesting.
And that's just the you know, all this is unconfirmed. This is, you know, these anonymous sources that the reporters sometimes try to encourage, but I can't print anonymous sources, so I'm just kind of sitting and waiting until we get some definite answers.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this in closing. Are we going to hear more? Do you feel like there are more stories here in the tragic story of the Murdaugh name and the family? Is there anyone else? Is there any other thing that is going to end up coming to light because of all the attention that was put onto Alec and that family of unscrupulous deeds within that family and into the community? Is there more to be uncovered, I guess, is the question.
Anything's possible. I think we know the most of it. I mean, some of the best investigative journalists and historians, you know, around the country have been digging into this family. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say they don't have many more skeletons left, but there can't be much left in that skeleton closet. Now, I think that what we may see in the future is we may see some more of the drug connection. There are more drug arrests against Alex or maybe other people in his drug ring. We may find some earlier, like we talked about earlier, there may be some other cases of stolen money that just haven't been uncovered yet, that is so old that maybe they got away with it for a while. We may see some other people, maybe some people, and this is just pure speculation, but there may be somebody at that law firm or somebody at that bank that knows more than they are letting on. But all these questions, like Stephen Smith cases, you know, only time and letting law enforcement do their job, time will tell. In the early days, before all this happened, I think that law enforcement might have been reluctant to pursue anything related to the Murdaugh family. But now I think SLED really wants to put effort into this case. And if there's a crime or a secret out there, I think they're going for it.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
There is much more to come with Michael DeWitt as we continue to discuss the long era and footprints of control that the Murdaughs had in Hampton County for nearly a century. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any pieces of our conversation. New pieces coming out all this week, Monday through Friday, right here on the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.